Welcome to The Hours, where we do a deep dive into the stuff that good coaches should know. I'm Tyler. I'm here with my friend Mark, and we get right into the content here. So Mark, let's kick it off with our big question of the day.
Yeah, I'll ask you the big question this week, and it's one that I would encourage all coaches to be asking themselves right now, especially at this point in the season. Tyler, what part of your team is the furthest from where you want it to be?
When I think about where I would like our team to be, the first place that my mind naturally goes is our execution of one of our systems. Execution on offense, execution on defense, execution of our actions, our shot selection. That's where my mind naturally goes. And I have to actually stop myself and not provide that as my answer. Instead, I believe that every coach should answer, and I will answer this as well, that it is something in our how, not what we do, but how we do what we do. How we do what we do would be how much energy we're bringing day in and day out, how much communication we're bringing in, the clarity of that communication, how would be our attitude that or the approach that we're bringing to a situation. How we do it would be the level of intent that we bring to every rep. Intent leads to intensity. That would be a how answer. How would be, how are we expecting to do more than our share and beating us yesterday? So that would all be a how thing, which I think is a level up from a what answer. And if we can improve our how as a team, the what will improve. If we improve our what, the how might not improve. And so I think that's a very important question to ask coaches. And if you're a head coach, I would introduce that exercise in a staff meeting. Ask your assistants, what part of our team is the furthest from where you want it to be right now? It's a great evaluative question to evaluate the perspective and the motivation and what your assistants are actually looking for, and to know the lens through which they're viewing your practices and your team. It's a great exercise for us to ask ourselves as well. And if I were to come in and watch your practice, anyone listening, I guarantee that the majority of the feedback that I'd be able to provide in an uplifting way would be about the how you do what you do and not the what. Though even myself, my mind first goes to the what because it's easy and obvious, and it's probably the easiest to fix, but it provides the least amount of traction, in my opinion.
Yeah, I loved hearing you say if you were going to watch the practice, because I find in our practice audits, the majority of the feedback is the how, right? Is like what you're doing is fine. It probably fits your system. It's something that you're comfortable with, something your players know. So maybe we could give you some what, but most of the time it's here's how we might improve a feedback loop, or how we could make that more efficient, or how we could make that more game-like. So really, really good. My mind also went to the what as well, but I do agree with the how. And you said something I thought that was really good that you said was, if we improve the how, the what likely gets better. If we improve the what, we might miss on the how. And I read something recently, talked about systems. It's systems give you the opportunity to be successful, but it's only as strong as the inputs. And what this message was talking about is the people, right? So we have to make, the stronger your inputs are, the better the system is. So think of this as a coach, you could have the best system in the world with very little talent. You're going to have a very low ceiling on results. So as a coach, you can have the best system in the world, but if you don't improve your how, you're going to leave a lot of meat on the bone. So really like that approach to the answer.
And I'll follow up with, again, this is savvy coaching, is the stuff good coaches should know. And so as a good coach, here's another thing I think that you should know. You should know to ask your players this regularly. And this is the question that I would sit down and incorporate into your regular one-on-one rhythm, incorporate into 5 to 10 minutes in your pre-practice as your assistants are working with the other players. Just grab your players and ask them, what part of your game is the furthest from where you want it? That level of insight is imperative because players don't come into practice thinking, oh, our team needs to get better today. That is not how players come into practice. Players come into practice thinking about, I need to get better today, or I want to perform well today. I asked my daughter last night, I wasn't at her practice. I said, Charlie, how was practice? She didn't say a single thing about her team. She's like, I shot the ball really well. It was so fun. I played so good. That is the only lens through which players, most players, unless they're just really, really special, very late in their career, it's the only lens through which players are viewing their practice. So they're coming into practice thinking, which part of my game is the furthest from where I want it, and how can I focus all my energy on improving that thing or showing off my strengths? And so if a player comes into practice, because players will tell on themselves, both in a positive and a negative way. So just by asking that question, you're going to understand where their focus is. And if you have a vision for player development, the system's only as strong as its input. It's only as strong as the players. And if you have a vision for a player that, and they need to be our defensive stopper and just sprint the floor so fast, that is the part of their game that's the furthest from where I want it as a coach. But they're coming in, they're like, my ball handling is the furthest from where I want it. I really want to be able to attack people off the dribble. Well, then the inputs are going to be crossing wires and you're not going to see traction. So
Tyler, let me interrupt you here. Because I do agree. I think some coaches don't want to ask questions because they fear that their players might be really far off, right? So we need this player to really focus on defense. They're focused on ball handling. Let's say we have that conversation before a practice. How do you handle that as a coach if they're just really far off?
Yeah, I would ask the five-year-old question. Why? Why? Just ask the five-year-old, like dig deeper a little bit. And either they'll have a reason, which is rare, or they won't. And then you can start with why in order to reframe which part of their game they should focus on. Start with why. Ask their why first, and regardless of their why, offer up your why. Okay, here's why I think you should consider this. And I'll give two examples from last night. One player, when I asked them last night which part of their game was the furthest from where they wanted it, they said their defense. He says, my on-ball defense, I know that that's my pathway to more playing time and impact. I said, that's amazing that you said that because that's exactly what I wanted you to focus on. And let me also, and this is where I went into why, let me also tell you why I think that your offensive rebounding is furthest off. Because you're an amazing, this is positive, you're an amazing offensive rebounder. And it's probably the biggest strength that you bring to the game. And I want you to do it more. And that was just providing a little bit of a why. On the flip side, there was a player that was talking about their shooting. Like, man, I just need to shoot more shots. I need to shoot more shots. Right? And I said, why? And they're like, well, because my parents are telling me I need to shoot more. That was their answer. That was their why. Right? And I'm like, well, I believe you're a college basketball player. And I know from the college coaches that I talk to and work with, the thing that they are looking for and that they would value is the ability to actually set up an offense to communicate and to lead, to, you know, slow down a team when they need to slow down, speed up a team when they need to slow up. And so I actually think that your communication and leadership is the furthest from where it should be. And really the reason is that's what's going to set you apart from all the other point guards out there that college coaches might be looking at. So I just offered up a why. And I think that why is always the question and why is always the answer.
Yeah. And I think one reminder too is we're talking about maybe areas of growth here with players, but I would also encourage you as a coach to tell players to double down on their strengths as well, right? We want to make what we do good, great. And then if we can improve on our weaknesses, that just raises the floor for us as a player, and then as we started the conversation as a coach as well. I would say what's furthest away from me is attacking my blind spots. So just if I was coaching a team right now and I was in the off season, I would identify my blind spots and then put a ton of energy into attacking those. How can I lean into my blind spots? How could I delegate or give ownership to my coaching staff to where my blind spots aren't blind anymore?
That's a really good answer. I've got another question for you.
Okay.
This one is probably going to come out of left field and surprise you a little bit. What part of your parenting game is the furthest from where you want it to be right now?
Gosh, this is a good one. And I feel like I'm way worse at this as a parent than I am as a coach. Follow through. So, or consistency. The number one trait you can have as a coach is being consistent. Knowing that as a player, when I walk into the gym every day, I know exactly what my coach is going to give me. They're going to give me the same energy, the same amount of patience, the same coaching tools, right? They're not going to be really emotional one day and then another day be checked out. I think that would be it, man, is consistency and follow through. So we talk a lot about, hey, we need to do this. We need to be better at this, or we want to eat dinner more as a family. And then life happens and I do not follow through enough. How about you?
That's good. I was just thinking that myself. I was actually being a really bad friend and listener, and I wasn't really listening to what you were saying. I was thinking about my own answer, which is a common error. But I did catch most of it. So I wrote down this word when I asked you that question, playfulness. I think that my playfulness as a parent is the furthest from where I would want it to be. I feel like I'm mostly correcting or teaching or planning. But I'm not playing nearly enough, whether it be time or just joy, or just playing games with them. So I want to be more playful with my kids.
Maybe when you were talking, you said the playfulness, right? You're always wanting to correct. I think same thing as a head coach. We are always in, I have to fix it mode. So to bring it back to the big question is, let's say a player says my ball handling or my shooting, but we're thinking their offensive rebounding or their on ball defense. I think sometimes we have the tendency to, ooh, no, I have to fix that answer to where it matches mine, which that might be the case, right? If we're so far off or that their answer is just taken out of left field, like your shooting example, my parents say I need to shoot more, so I want to come in here and work on my shot. That might be one we could maybe get more aligned. But let's say this player says, I want to really work on not turning the ball over, right? Handling the ball or being stronger with the ball. But you were thinking one ball defense. It's like, you know what? This player really could benefit from handling the ball better. Let's just leave it at that, right? Because if it's something that they are intrinsically motivated to work on and correct, maybe we get more out of that than if we were always in fix-it mode as a head coach. So, yeah, I think as a coach, we're always just wired to fix. And sometimes we got to let some things go and it be player-led as well.
That's really good. And I receive that as parenting and spouse advice also. So thank you for the counseling session. I receive your coaching and we get all this stuff on the hours. So gosh, I mean, as coaches, we give so much energy to this thing and at the expense often of our families and our spouses. So, I just want to encourage any coach that is listening. Family is for life. You may or may not even have this job next year. In season, out of season, don't sacrifice your family for a win. At the end of the day, that's what's going to be there for you. And I think that happens way too much. I know when I was in the college coaching game, I just saw wrecked marriages and wrecked families because of the addiction to success in coaching. And it was really sad. And I just want to encourage everyone that at the end of that road does not lie satisfaction, only regret.
Yeah, that's probably a big question in the future, right? Is how to prioritize family during the season.
That's good.
All right, let's go mailbag. I'll lead off and ask you a question. Let's go lock left. You're the expert. We had a question come in And it's talking about the ball is already in jail. And I'm going to paraphrase here. Are we still trying to force the ball to the left hand with the idea of every catch is a dribble, every dribble is a pass? Or do we want to just pin it to the sideline and keep it in jail?
As always, the answer is it depends. And yes, so there's layers to this thing. When first installing or first attempting to communicate your principles, every catch is a dribble would be the baseline level. And so in that scenario, attempting to make a catch in jail, a dribble to the left hand is going to be the outcome that we're looking for, because we're trying to train a habit of pressure, being in the bubble, speeding up the ball. I was breaking down film of a college team that we're doing some consulting for installing lock left. And one of the biggest pieces of feedback was the players still don't have the habit of how they approach the ball. Approaching the ball, whether it be a close off on the 3-point line or even a catch up near half court, they don't yet have the habit of body angle and pressure levels for how they approach the ball. And so I wouldn't confuse the issue at all at that point with this college team of changing how we might approach the ball in one area of the floor, because they don't have a consistent baseline habit of making every catch a dribble. So as always, there's layers to this thing. Now, second layer answer. When in disadvantaged defense, or when the offense has advantage, what we call dominoes, we want to make every catch a dribble. So if there's a domino catch in jail, we want to make it a dribble. Because if we are disadvantaged and approach that ball in jail to keep it there, we are going to give up the opportunity for a 7 or an off the catch 3. So when disadvantaged, even when in jail, we want to make it a dribble to the baseline. That would be the second layer answer, which we would then apply consistently all around the arc. Every disadvantaged catch or every close off situation, make it a dribble regardless of where it is and try to make that dribble to the left, because we're in a disadvantage and we want to make the offense have to make another decision. That'd be our second level answer. Third level answer. If a team has very good habits on those first two things that I just said, and the ball gets to jail and we're neutral, not disadvantaged, that is when I would ask the coach, okay, what do you want? Would you prefer to keep the ball in jail and try to hunt passes? Or would your preference be to try to put more pressure on the offense, make them drive baseline, and maybe bring your jail overload to trap that baseline drive, and then zone up on the backside, maybe giving the offense, dominoes, but maybe getting a steal? What's your preference? What do you think your team's better at? And then that would inform what you would do in jail. But we wouldn't even get to layer 3 until we can consistently be 1 and 2. And just a bit of feedback, very few teams are successfully executing our first and second steps anytime in the first year of an install. And it might happen towards the end of the season.
Great answer. Also, you could ask the big question, right? So what part of lock left is my team the furthest away from where we need it to be? You could go through your principles of play or just your systems. And then that would be the what, right? Instead of how, but I think there's value in that too. Very good. Love that. And you even hit the follow-up. So perfect.
Let me ask you one then.
Okay.
Coach asks, just finished watching week 1 of the drive and space deep dive that Mark is taking coaches through in our cohort of consulting this month for our GROW members. And the question is this for you, Mark. Do you extend this offense full court when playing against full court pressure? For context, this is a coach coming from Read and React, and they just ran pass and cut as the press breaker.
The answer is it depends, right? So I'll go through a few different scenarios. One, yes, you can extend it into the full court. If we usually played with a 2-point guard system, so instead of a racker and a dragon, we could just have 2 rackers and they could be a racker dragon interchangeably. So if Tyler and I were let's just call them racker dragons, right? We could fill either role. I want to make closest player imbalance. So if Tyler is the closest player, he grabs the ball out of the net. I'm the racker. He now is the dragon. And we are playing in tandem up the floor using Rose series. And that's how we'd extend it in the full court. So if Tyler inbounded the ball to me, I think a good press offense advances the ball with the dribble and the pass, and even preferably the pass, right? Because it's the best way to beat pressure. We don't want to over dribble and get sped up. So let's say I get a catch outside the dead zone, start to advance the ball. Tyler's job as the dragon or the other rackers to stay with me and maybe one step behind me. If I get stopped, I pass to Tyler. I could fingers cut, but I'm going to make that a shallow cut. So my fingers cut will give Tyler a bunch of space to advance the ball with the dribble. I come back for the ball. Now he passes. So we're going to really mix the pass and the drive to advance the ball. Once we get near half court, now we can make that a true Rose cut. We could go fingers, fan, follow, whatever we wanted. And now we have seamless flow into offense. So that would be where I would start if I was playing with two rackers. If you're playing with a dragon that is more of a four player, you don't want them to be involved. What I might do is just clear out for my racker. You could clear out and just have your racker advance the ball. I would encourage you to work a lot of ball handling, right? We've talked about the four levels of ball handling, which all would apply in that clear out situation. You could bring your five up to set a ball screen in the full court, which we've all seen. And then the last thing I'll say to this coach coming from Read and React is, maybe this is a year. I think this was a high school coach that asked it. So let's say this is a year where we don't really have a true racker. We could advance the ball with your Read and React principles, just pass cut. We have done that in the past, especially when I was teaching motion. We just did exactly what this coach said. We extended our offense in the full court because I think more coaches should look at offense through the lens that offense starts on the immediate change of possession. There has never been a rule that says you have to start running your offense past half court. So as soon as we get possession of the ball, we're running offense full length of the floor. We've done that as well, even in the drive and space system, in years where I didn't feel like I had a racker or rackers that could carry the load in the full court against pressure.
Yeah, and I think this is in line with what you said, but I want to highlight this. Don't run a press break that is different than your offense. Look at pressure as an opportunity to improve your offense. I think that's the biggest miss and one of the biggest blind spots that I've seen across coaching is we need this A as our press break and this B is what we do when we break the press, which is what you were just saying, but I just want to be very, very clear. If you're trying to make, you give a lot of options, I would say pick an option that is aligned. Don't pick an option that is different as much as possible.
Yeah, I think it goes back to just teach principles that beat pressure. Right. So what in our offense or if our racker was going to have the ball, how do we want them to operate versus pressure? Right. And we would teach that more so than press break. A lot of coaches will ask, hey, coach, do you have a good press break? I'm like, not really, but we break the press effectively. I don't invest time in searching for press breaks because we understand how to create space and attack space against pressure. We understand how to stay out of areas that defense wants us to go, right? It goes to our spots, right? Where is defense want us to go when they press offense? Where do we want to get to? So it's that yin and yang that you're always battling. So yeah, teach principles that beat pressure instead of press breaks.
Before we do the next mailbag, Mark, a coach reached out to me after the first week of Drive and Space. I was obviously on it. Drive and Space is also obviously not race and space, though it's related. And many of the coaches on the Drive and Space cohort were our race and space coaches. And so this coach reached out to me and said, hey, Tyler, how does it feel for drive and space to being taught when some of it's different than race and space? And here is my answer. As long as your offense is principled, consistent, and you know your why, I am in support of that offense. One, is it principled? Meaning, do you have principles of play that are overarching over any actions or movements and you're teaching a principled or a conceptual offense? Two, is it consistent? Are those principles consistent in the full court, in the half court, in transition, end of game? Is it consistent? And lastly, do you know why you're doing what you're doing? You have a racker and a dragon. Why? You have two rackers. Why? You're running a two-side break. Why? You're passing up the floor. Why? You're not passing up the floor. Why? As long as you have a why and you can articulate it and you're not just doing it because it's what you've always done, then I am in support of that. And I think you would be as well. And that's why we are aligned in Savvy Coaching. It's not about what you do. It's about how you do what you do. And so I think that that is just something I wanted to be able to articulate to, I think, a lot of our coaches that are going to be listening to this. As we continue to build Savvy Coaching, as we continue to share the stuff good coaches should know, I don't care what system you run. And I don't think you do either. I think we care about how you run that system on offense and defense.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's so much overlap that we've talked about this before. There's some things that are different about it. But I also think you can take race and space concepts and drive and space concepts and create your own offense, which I think what you should be doing, right? There are certain things that we might teach in race and space that could easily fit into a drive and space system. And then there's things that we teach in drive and space that would easily be blended into the race and space, because that is what race and space and drive and space are, is we're blending a bunch of concepts that we like, that is modern basketball, that we value, and making it a system. So coaches can do that. And if you need help doing that, that's where we sit courtside with you. And we offer one-on-one consulting to help you develop that system if you want. We've done that with coaches at all levels all across the world. I'll say this too, with race and space, drive and space. You said, as long as it's principled, one thing that kept coming up on the cohort this Tuesday was, and it's something that we differ on, in drive and space, principle or concept, we always pass to the first open player. So for me, we really why do we do that? We really value ball movement. When we move the ball, we move the defense. And where all of this stemmed from was, one, my motion background, which is a bunch of passing. And then my evolution to dribble drive, where I didn't have enough passing. So this is where we have blended motion principles, dribble drive principles to create drive in space. So one thing we really value is ball movement. How do we get ball movement? We pass to the first open player. That goes to really our pace, or the way we move the ball as far as our principles of play.
I'm satisfied with your why. How do you get a post involved in driving space?
Two different ways. So if you're a coach asking this, I assume that you have a post player that is a big impact player for you. One easy way to do this, and this goes with driving space or race in space. If you're dribbled at, we move opposite. Right? So we're in the porch or the dunker spot, we're dribbled at, we move opposite, we want to get you a lob or a drop pass for a layup. If the ball is passed to your side, that would be a trigger for you to duck in. And that way we could get you some post catches and allow you to operate as a traditional post player would. So that would be number one. Number two would be install triggers to lift that post out of the porch. So one thing we do in race and space, on a blast cut, when we pass down, we get into a zoom. If I wanted to get my post player more involved, I would zoom through the post. That would be a small tweak that I can make out of race and space. And out of drive and space, we've done the same thing where we would install triggers that would lift our five, where we could now get them the ball at the elbow to where they could play one-on-one from the high post. If they were a mismatch there, we could get them in a ball screen. And with ball screen is a lot, I think a lot of coaches might look at that and say, well, if my five is setting a ball screen, then that's more action for my point guard. I would say the opposite may be true. Usually on a ball screen, the player that scores the least is the player coming off the ball screen. Maybe at the very lowest levels that happens, but usually we're creating advantage for the other players using the ball screen because we're bringing two to the ball. So that would be a few different ways. Tyler, what about you? Anything you would add to that?
My favorite way would be off of splits. So if we have a post player, and I'm going to define post player probably differently than this question was intended. If we have a player that has an advantage close to the rim over the person guarding them, they are a post player. I'm not defining a post player as a person that stays in the post or near the basket. So a completely different definition probably than how the question was asked.
let me interject one thing, because I can't wait. It's too good. I would encourage coaches to think of the post as a place of attack rather than a position, which I think you're saying. So we could get multiple players there.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So I like to get someone attacking through the place of the post off of splits. A split is any sort of off-ball screen where two players come together and then they split, the split being most important. Now, I have to communicate this. For us, our principle of play is we hunt nines first and seven second. So I would ask you, okay, in our split, if we're hunting nines first and seven second, what should happen first in our split? Well, if we're hunting nines first, the first thing we should do should be one of the two players in the split should go to the rim, right? That's, so instead of saying, hey, this person always goes to the rim, this person always pops, or, you know, you go in two different directions, we connect it back to our principles of play. So in the split, one player, doesn't matter if it's the screener or the screenee, is going to go to the rim. And second, the second cut is going to be someone splitting and hunting space outside of the three-point line. We hunt sevens second. So what's happening more and more now defensively is I think we're seeing more switching than we saw 10 years ago on defense. More teams switch. So if we're splitting between a player that tends to have more of an advantage in the post, a larger player, and a player that's smaller, well, guess who's probably going to be hunting the nine, regardless of if they're the screener or the screenee? It's probably going to be the larger player. And so if they can split and possibly get a switch, and it's dynamic to the rim, that's how I like to get them into the post, is off of some sort of a split. How we were training it last night is we run splits off of our blast series. So a player blasts out of the corner, catches to the wing, and we split between the action spots. So one player is going to the rim, one player is going hunting outside the seven. We already have the ball in the wing, which is an ideal place to enter the ball into the post, and a great way for us to attack. So if you have a post player, someone has an advantage of the post, that's playing on the perimeter in a five out and they want to post up, guess what they should just do all the time? Go set a split screen and then dive into the post. And I think that's a really dynamic way, and probably more dynamic in my opinion than just ceiling from the porch.
Like it. All right. Let's, you want to hit us with a game of the week?
Yeah. Game of the week is 5v4 install. Whenever installing something new, I'd encourage you to give an advantage to the new thing. So if you're installing something new on the offensive end, try five players on offense and four on defense. If you're installing something new on the defensive end, try five players on defense and four players on offense. And so we would just play 5v4 install. And let me do it defensively. This will be fun. So defensively, here's how I'd run it. Full court 5v4. You would still have two teams. You got your light team and you got your dark team. Let's say that we're installing our blue lock left defense, our 1-3-1 defense. All we would do is on the white team's defensive end, I would have an all-time defensive player, meaning they stay on defense. And on the dark team's defensive end, I'd have an all-time defensive player. I'd put that player at the nail in the center of our 1-3-1 and saying, you can play defense, but you can't cross half court. You got to play your role. You don't get to go play offense. And so we're playing full court 5v4 with one defender not leaving the defensive end. So every possession, there's going to be five defenders and four offensive players. This allows the offense to experiment, find more success, have a bit of an advantage as we're installing this concept. You could do the same thing and flip it. Let's say we're installing a high ball screen action, right? Same thing. We just have an all-time offensive player. And that offensive player, let's say we're sitting them on the porch, right? And so they can't go down and play defense. And so every time we get to neutral in transition, we just call up that a porch player into a high ball screen. We're attacking 5v4 because our other teammate is back waiting at the other end. So 5v4 install, I think, is a great way to give an advantage to a new concept, and you can do it on both ends of the floor.
Two things I liked about that is I'm assuming when we're leaving somebody on the other end, we're able to play full court, right? So, yeah, so I love that. How often do coaches install something in the full court? Like never, right? So really, really love that. And then second thing, just you use the ball screen example. The way we teach ball screens has always been remove a defender, because then you're creating a read off the ball screen. If we play 3-on-3, then, you know, or let's say 3-on-3 ball screen, you come off your neutral. It's like, okay, what do we do next, coach? Remove one of those defenders. You automatically have offense at an advantage. So now we're working on Am I driving to the rim off the ball screen? Am I hitting the pocket pass? Am I hitting the shake or the rise out of the corner? The way to create that read over and over is remove one. So really, really good. And I would say this, when you ask your players what part of their game is the furthest from where they want to be, the player with the worst answer has to be the all-time defender. How about that?
Ooh, I like that. I like that's good. Okay, this is good. Let's flow directly. And as often we find, the game of the week can lead into the teach or practice better. Or, you know, one of the things that we've referenced earlier can lead into the teach better or practice better, because maybe it's a new concept and now you know how to go and apply it. So let me ask you this, Mark, what are some ways that we can teach split action better?
Good question. And I love split action, so I'm glad you asked this one. And I'm glad you brought it up in the mailbag. I'll give you two or three things here. First, I had this conversation with a coach after watching some film of their install split game. If we get into a split, so in your scenario, we pass to the wing off a blast cut and we got an action to action split. If I'm the screener and I'm coming to screen for you, I want you to put your foot on the 3-point line at the very highest point that we would set our split. Even better would be we set it always at the level of the defense. Because if it's too high, then we almost take away our 9, right? And then to play off the principle, we hunt 9s first, 7 seconds. If you are the ball handler, I think it's area of growth for most coaches is teach players what to look for, train the eyes. So if we're trying to find a 9 first, then I'm always anticipating the cut going to the rim. Because I think a good split allows for either player to cut to the rim, right? So if I see it, it's there. If I think about it, it's gone. So what am I going to look for? 9, 9, 9. Are they cutting to the rim? I'm anticipating that cutter. And then I'll give you one thing, my last teaching point in a split that I'll give you. If you can see the offensive player's lead hand, so on a back cut or a split cut, when I'm going to the rim, I'm sticking out my hand to give you a target. If you can see all 5 of my fingers, throw the ball. If you can't, meaning maybe defense is denying the ball or we didn't create any separation, then we look for the 7. We look for the perimeter player.
I just learned some really good sticky language and teaching points on that. And if split game or split action is not a part of what you currently do as a coach, I would really strongly consider it as the next action or wrinkle to add to your offense. I do think it's underutilized. I do think it's undertaught. And I do think it creates a lot of opportunities, even the post opportunities, like I shared earlier, creative ways to get what you actually want, but in a more conceptual way. All right, Mark, any final thoughts on the hours here today?
No, man. Good stuff as always. Appreciate everybody spending time with us.
Thanks for spending the hours with us. This is Stuff Good Coaches Should Know. We're Savvy Coaching. I'm Tyler. This is Mark.
Stay savvy. Stay savvy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.